Disclaimer: the following episode of 90s Crime Time contains racial aspects that may not be suitable for some listeners, as racial slurs will be used in this episode. Listener's discretion is advised. Hello. It's October 19th, 2025. My name is Simone, and this is 90s Crime Time. Hello and welcome to a brand new episode of 90s Crime Time. And if you're new to 90s Crime Time, welcome to the show. Like always, I hope you all have had a great week so far and you're enjoying your weekend. And as I mentioned before the show began, this episode talks about subjects of racism and will feature some slurs. Therefore, again, listener's discretion is strongly advised and may not be suitable for young listeners. And with that, let's dive in to today's case. The year was 1995, and in the rural county of Robertson County, Tennessee, although it was smaller in population, it was still filled with an interesting history and plenty of things to do. Reports state that the county, which had around 41,000 people at the time, was known for its rolling hills and was once known as the quote-unquote dark-fired tobacco capital of the world. In Robertson County, many residents enjoyed the numerous pockets of nature and open land the county had to offer, with many camping, fishing, or kayaking trips on the county's Red River. Robertson County was also known as a top tourist destination during the Halloween season, because the city of Adams was renowned for hosting the Bell Witch Story, a tale about a witch that allegedly haunted the county. And while Robertson County was not known to be the most diverse county in the state, for the most part, residents here, regardless of race, were cordial to one another. However, in 1995, when many came together and celebrated a man who advocated for equal rights, a terrible incident happened here that would leave one man dead and have many in the county and surrounding areas wondering if they were safe. In the following case, you'll find out who the victim was, the investigation and aftermath, in a case I title Deadly Division. Although today's crime occurs in Robertson County, Tennessee, let's start the story where the situation began, in Guthrie, Kentucky. On the afternoon of January 14, 1995, 17-year-old Guthrie, Kentucky resident Damian Darden borrowed his mother's car to take him and some friends to see a movie. He eventually picked up all the friends, 17-year-old Freddie Morrow, 17-year-old Tony Andrews, and 15-year-old Marcus Merriweather. And reports state that as Damien was driving and came upon a stop sign, he saw a man driving a red pickup truck past him with a Confederate flag attached to it. Seeing this angered Damien, and he reportedly told the friends, quote-unquote, "Let's go whip this dude." However, before Damien and crew began to go after the guy with the truck, Damien thought it might be a good idea to get some more friends from town to join. So, Damien got some more friends to join them in a separate car, and together they drove around Guthrie trying to find the man driving the truck. Reports state that Damien eventually spotted the truck at a gas station named Janie's and pulled up close to the truck. Then reports state the young men in Damien's car noticed someone in the truck reach out their hand through the sliding back window of the truck's cab and shook the Confederate flag at them. And at least one of them said they heard someone from the truck call them niggers and then drive off. Angry, both groups of friends gave chase to the pickup truck, and the pursuit led them into neighboring Robertson County, Tennessee. Along the way, Freddie Morrow told the group he had a gun, and they laughed at him. However, reports state Freddie lifted his shirt and revealed a pistol to them that was tucked in his pants. And as the car got close to the pickup truck, Freddie took the gun and began shooting at it wildly out the window until the gun jammed. Then Damien went faster and got side by side with the truck. When he did, Freddie was able to take the gun and shot at the truck again. Meanwhile, the occupants inside the truck, 19-year-old Michael Westerman and his wife Hannah, were in high panic, especially since one of the bullets hit Michael, who was driving. Reports state that during the chase, Michael, after realizing he'd been shot at, pushed Hannah on the floorboard to try and save her. But after he got shot, Hannah climbed over to the driver's side so that she could drive and get Michael help. As the cars continued to close in on the truck, Hannah felt blocked and drove through a ditch across an embankment and into a parking lot in an attempt to flee the scene. But then both cars reportedly blocked her access to the parking lot, so she had to cross another ditch to exit the parking lot. Then she drove back towards Guthrie to seek medical attention for Michael and to get away, hopefully, from the occupants chasing them. Reports state Damien and crew then sped away with the other group of friends close behind them until they came to a stop on another road in Robertson County. And even though Hannah wanted to head back home to Guthrie to get Michael some help, the couple ended up at Vanderbilt Medical Center, where they rushed Michael into surgery and worked on him for hours. But reports state doctors could not save him, and Michael died the next day on January 15th. And on the same day, Damien, Freddie, Tony, and Marcus turned themselves in to the police. According to reports, Michael David Westerman was born on August 20th, 1975, in Clarksville, Tennessee, to David and Joanne Westerman, and raised in Guthrie, Kentucky, a small town of about 1,500 back then. Michael also had two sisters, and as he grew up, he and his family were very close and attended church regularly. They also did many things around their town, as David and Joanne preferred to stay in their small area. But reports also state that as Michael grew older, he became very outgoing and adventurous, and liked to travel somewhat out of town around the county, Todd County, and nearby Robertson County, Tennessee, or Nashville with his friends. They'd go camping, fishing, swimming, or do other fun outdoorsy activities together. And speaking of traveling outside of Guthrie, during Michael's senior year of high school, he got a job as a dishwasher at a Holiday Inn not too far from home in Clarksville, Tennessee. While there, some of his coworkers thought he was, quote-unquote, a goofy teenager who sometimes read comic books when not busy, and thought he was just a typical worker. However, some other reports state some of his coworkers thought Michael was, quote-unquote, obnoxious and ignorant, and that he pestered other staff members. According to reports, one former coworker of Michael told the press that Michael often picked with her and made fun of her Jehovah's Witness religion. She added that he also picked on a friend of hers who also worked at the hotel, and that once he even picked her up, and when he didn't put her down, a cook at the hotel intervened. And according to the woman, Michael called him a racial slur and then was promptly fired. Despite his firing, however, it didn't seem to faze him much, because reports state that after he married his high school sweetheart, Hannah, shortly after graduation, he got a job driving a forklift for Hannah's father's company. And not too long after they married, Michael and Hannah welcomed newborn twins. Also, outside of family time, reports state that Michael spent much time alone outdoors and engaged in other activities, with one of his favorite pastimes being the study of Confederate history. You see, reports state that Michael's family believed they were descendants of Confederate soldiers from the Civil War. In fact, an aunt of Michael's reportedly introduced him to a lot of information about his alleged forefathers, and Michael was hooked. According to reports, after he started studying Confederate history, he received a Confederate flag from his aunt and treasured it as a prized possession. Michael first hung his flag in his bedroom, but as he grew older, he hung it on his bike and then on his pickup truck. Michael's family felt he carried his flag around due to his pride in his Confederate roots. However, to others who knew him, they thought he flew his flag to show pride in his high school mascot, which was coincidentally called the Rebel. And as a matter of fact, many of Michael's classmates and fellow alumni flew the flag with pride, as many of them said, for their school pride. The flag was plastered all over the school, on the front doormat, bookcases, trophy cases, and even on their yearbook, which was called the Rebel. However, reports state that many of the black population of Todd County High felt uncomfortable with so much display of the flag at the school and having it as their mascot. Still, many thought they could do nothing about it, since there were more white students than there were black. As a matter of fact, though, many black residents of Guthrie overall felt uncomfortable with the vast array of Confederate memorabilia shown throughout the city. Reports also state that not only did many residents of Guthrie and Todd County as a whole proudly display their love for the Rebel mascot from the local high school, but many residents also showed their pride for the flag in a way They thought they were honoring their alleged Confederate ancestors as well, just like Michael. They didn't fly the flag to cause harm. They were celebrating their heritage. However, reports state that while some flew the flag to show honor, others boldly used it for other reasons. According to a report, some residents in Guthrie and Todd County used the flag to try to exclude people they didn't seem worthy of their presence. For example, one article states that a local biker bar in town was widely known for its customers who proudly displayed the flag and frequently held events that demonstrated they were not supportive of racial progress. For example, one year on the Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. holiday, this particular bar held a counter event, calling it Fuck Martin Luther King Day, and instead named it Remember James Earl Ray Day, in a nod to Dr. King's accused assassin. There were also other noted racial incidents in Guthrie during the 90s and before. But reports state, for the most part, black and white residents got along. Whatever the reason Michael displayed the flag, it didn't seem he flew it to offend anyone, even if he had said some questionable things regarding race in the past. A report also states that growing up, even though it is well known, you can still be prejudiced even if you have friends or acquaintances of different races. Michael's family allowed Michael to have friends over, whether white or black, and one of those friends who was over his house often was Damian Darden. According to reports, Damian Darden was born in 1977 to a family that had deep roots in Guthrie. However, despite coming from a loving family, he had a rough upbringing. Reports state that when Damian was 2, his father was murdered at a bar, and his killer was only sentenced to a few years, which angered the family. Even worse, Damian's family would be on edge when the man returned to town after his sentence, and they would see him every once in a while. Also, despite having friends, like Michael growing up, by the time he got to high school, an article states, Damian and several other black students were involved in a brawl at Todd Central High. While they all got in trouble, many of the black students involved in the brawl, including Damian, were expelled, but none of the white students were. Also, shortly after his removal, Damian and some friends were involved in another fight outside of a Guthrie housing project, where it was reported that some white residents called them niggers, kicked them, and scratched them. When they all went to court following the incident, Damian and his family were angry when the judge in the case simply told the assailants to quote-unquote stay away from them for 2 years without giving them any jail time. After this, Damian began to build resentment toward many of the white residents of town, and it seemed that if one more incident happened to him, which possibly had to do with his race or being offended, it would be the tip of the iceberg. Reports also state that during his youth, Damian became friends with another person who also struggled at a young age, and his name was Freddie Morrow. According to reports, Frederick Deontay Morrow was also born in 1977 in Chicago, Illinois, the youngest of 8 children. His father was killed in a car accident 3 days after he was born, leaving his mother a single mom. But despite being raised with many siblings, Freddie's mother paid close attention to each of her children equally as possible, and instilled the importance of education, as she was very educated with a bachelor's and master's degree, and worked as a mental health professional. However, despite her success in raising her family and having an education, when Freddie was little, his mother suddenly became ill with a neurological condition that weakened her bones and made her almost unable to walk or move her limbs. And due to this, she was unable to work and eventually lost her home. While she was unable to take care of her children while she was recovering, her children were shuffled around to different relatives' homes, with Freddie living with a relative in the Chicago suburb of Harvey. While this environment seemed to be stable for Freddie, reports state he became surrounded by what his mother tried to steer him away from, and that was gang violence. You see, even back in the 90s, many parts of Chicago were known as having a heavy gang presence. But Freddie's parents were able to raise their children in a more peaceful part of the city until things went wrong. Freddie became surrounded by quote-unquote wannabe suburban gangsters who tried to mimic what they thought real gangsters were in the big city. And eventually, Freddie wanted to imitate them as well, while around this group. When he became a teenager, he even got an alleged gang tattoo printed on him. And after this happened, his mother decided it was time for a change. So, according to reports, she decided to send Freddie to Guthrie, Kentucky, where his father grew up, to live with one of Freddie's aunts. Reports state that despite Guthrie being drastically different from the Chicagoland area, Freddie at first did well here. He attended church with relatives, started dating a nice young woman, made friends, and he really enjoyed the quietness of rural Kentucky. However, reports also state Freddie still felt out of place here, particularly because he felt many around the school, including some teachers, allegedly side-eyed his quote-unquote baggy jeans, earring, and tattoo. And no matter what he originally thought his teachers thought of him, the reports state he may have confirmed their alleged biases by his sophomore year. He got into fights, talked back, and was suspended so much that he had to repeat the 10th grade. It's not clear what made Freddie act out suddenly when he got to Kentucky, but what is known is that just like Damien, he too apparently dealt with racial issues here. And when he first got to Guthrie and spotted the displays of the Confederate flag, he at first thought it was no big deal, since he saw the flag on the TV show Dukes of Hazzard, and thought that maybe the students flying the flag around were showcasing Southern pride. But over time, he felt the sense many of the flag flyers were taunting the black students, and it made him angry. And when Freddie became friends with Damien, Antonio Tony Andrews, who was also a childhood friend of Michael's, and Marcus Merriweather, reports state they all grew frustrated with what they felt was disrespect around town. And after Michael's murder occurred, reports state, despite Damien and Freddie feeling some vindication of harming a Confederate flag flyer, or to them, a racist, it turns out Damien, who apparently started this whole ordeal, got it wrong. Reports state that Damien thought the man who flew the Confederate flag in his face and called him alleged racial slurs wasn't some random man. It was his childhood friend, Michael Westerman. And possibly after realizing who was shot, or not wanting to get into any further trouble, all four young men turned themselves in to the police later that evening. Thank you. Reports state that after news spread about Michael's murder, it spread like an unprecedented wildfire, with plenty of controversy. After many Confederate supporters learned that Michael was an alleged descendant of the soldiers and had Confederate pride, many came from around the country to pay their respects at his funeral. As a matter of fact, Michael's casket was draped with the flag, and a Confederate shrine was later placed at his grave. And even many of his supporters called him a quote-unquote modern-day martyr for the Confederacy. Reports also state that after Michael's funeral, and as the trials for all four young men came close, racial tensions were at an all-time high in Todd County and the surrounding areas. Many black and white residents became uncomfortable around each other after many publicly stated whether they supported Michael or his alleged assassins. It was also reported that some chapters of the Ku Klux Klan rallied in and around Guthrie to show their support for Michael's family and spread vile and untrue information about the black community of Guthrie and the black community of the entire country. While they were there, they also tried to recruit members. However, many Southern heritage groups and Michael's family denounced the Klan's involvement, with Michael's father, David, telling the press that he didn't blame his son's murder on the entire black community, and that he had no problem with black people, and that he wouldn't have had black people over his home if he did. Fast forwarding to the trials for all four young men in 1996, prosecutors decided to give Tony Andrews and Marcus Merriweather a plea deal if they turned state's evidence against Damien and Freddie. And they agreed. When Tony took the stand and testified for the state, he told the jury about driving around with Damien and Freddie and seeing someone in Michael's truck waving the Confederate flag at them. He then stated that under Freddie's orders, Damien followed the truck, and eventually Freddie started shooting at it. For their cooperation, Marcus and Tony were given 2 years probation. When it was time for Damien and Freddie, who were both charged with kidnapping and first-degree murder, to testify, Freddie admitted to the jury that he did shoot Michael, but only after he was pressured by the other three to do so, and that he never told Damien to follow Michael's truck and never intended to hurt anyone. Damien testified and said no one in the car discussed fighting anyone in the truck, and that the only reason they followed the truck was to simply mess with the occupants who allegedly waved the flag at them. He also denied that anyone coerced Freddie to shoot or that he boxed Hannah in as she tried to get away. As the jury deliberated the verdicts for Freddie and Damien, tensions were high between their families and Michael's, with reports stating that at one point, Freddie's mother caught Hannah allegedly mean-mugging her. When she called her out on it, Hannah called her a bitch, which led to an argument between the families. On January 12, 1996, the verdict was in, and both Damien Darden and Freddie Morrow were found guilty. And the judge immediately sentenced them to life without the possibility of parole for 25 years. Since the verdicts, Damien's parole has been denied, and it's unclear if Freddie ever got a chance of parole, because according to the Tennessee Department of Corrections website, Freddie Morrow has since passed away, with the cause of death or year not made public. Also, after the verdicts, racial tensions in Guthrie and Todd County, Kentucky, remained tense. During an interview with David Westerman after the trial, he told the press in part, quote-unquote, "They say that war ended a long time ago, but around here, it's like it's still going on." The story of the murder of Michael Westerman comes from the sources of the Tennessean, the Courier Journal, Kentucky New Era, and others I'll put in the notes. And that's it. I'm not going to have an opinion piece today. I know that this episode was heavy for a lot of you. I did mention in the disclaimer that I would be using some slurs because I did want to tell the story of what I saw in the press and what I've read. Like I said, I'm not going to have an opinion because it was already heavy enough, I believe, this episode and the story of Michael Westerman's murder. But I would like to know what you all think. And thank you for tuning in to this brand new episode of 90s Crime Time. And again, I hope you found it interesting. If you haven't done so already, please leave a hopefully nice rating and or review on whatever podcast platform where you listen to the show. I'll also post about this new episode on 90s Crime Time on Instagram, which has gained more followers, which I'm really happy about. Thank you again for following the IG page of 90s Crime Time. I still don't know how you all found it because I haven't been getting as many downloads as before, but I do thank you all for following the page and continuing supporting 90s Crime Time. I do hope you tell a family or friend more about the show so that way I can hopefully get more downloads. That'd be really nice and more followers for the podcast. That'd be great. But either way, I do appreciate your support. Stay safe and healthy. And I promise to be on time for the next episode because it will be a Halloween themed episode. I'm really excited to bring it to you all, a 90s Halloween murder story. And that's it. Again, stay safe and healthy, and I'll see you soon for a brand new Halloween episode of 90s Crime Time.